now, fueled by facts and driven by truth. Broadcasting live from beautiful British Columbia, it's Roadkill Radio. Now here are your hosts, Terry Simpson and Ron Gray.
And in case you didn't know it was Roadkill, you could just look at Ron Gray's t-shirt and know for sure you're at the right place.
I'm in uniform.
Unlike some of us. I'm feeling like I should have dressed for the occasion.
You're in mufti.
I've got the color anyway. Yes. The Roadkill blue, right? Mm. How's Ron Gray?
Well, you ought to know, Kerry Simpson, you've been keeping me busy all week. I'm busy. But there's lots of good stuff happening.
But haven't gotten into trouble, have you? So, you see, it can be a good thing.
No, I haven't confessed any trouble yet.
No, is there something you need to tell me?
Well, look, Terry O'Neill is on the Canadian Human Rights Commission's hit list, and I'm not.
Well, yeah, but you're in good company, because I didn't make it either. No, and I think we deserve to be there.
Well, I think so. Yeah. Except, you know, I'm now one of the few people in Canada who has a piece of paper from a government official saying I'm not a hate monger. That's hard to get.
Well, we're going to be talking about that, because that's going to be a large part of tonight's show, Ron Gray. Of course, Ron Gray, you're here tonight. Terry O'Neill is away on holidays. I'm not sure how that works. Certainly not on good behavior, but he escaped. We let him.
I'll bet he's listening. Hi, Terry.
We'll deal with him when he returns. You know what I think it is? I think it's because he's scared to be here with me because of that column he wrote about the HST. Did you get your HST envelope?
I did.
All three of them?
It was a complicated process. I had to help my mother-in-law and my sister-in-law through it.
Okay, now, am I missing something here, or would there have been a more efficient way to do this?
I don't know, but I heard of some people who live in apartments, and bunches of these things came and were left in the lobby where other people could pick them up and make use of them. So there's going to be an investigation, I think, of the process of how this was done by Elections BC. You know something? We keep playing around with new trendy ideas about how to conduct elections, mail-in ballots, let's do it on the internet. Everything that has been tried except a paper ballot marked by live people whose faces can be seen, every other form has wound up being abused. Look, there are people who don't want to run our democratic elections the way they ought to be run. And if you give them a vehicle that will allow them to stuff the ballot box, they will stuff the ballot box.
No.
Yes.
No.
I'm sorry. I disillusioned you.
Ron Gray.
One should not do that to the youth of this country.
What are you talking about?
All right.
The concept is just so far-fetched, Ron Gray. Couldn't possibly happen in British Columbia.
Couldn't happen.
Anyway, my theory is that Terry O'Neill finally got, you know, really scared, because a couple times I told him I was going to take him to task, and then, you know, he just guided the show, and we know it was deliberate, you know, so the discussion couldn't get around to me having to spank him. But, you know, he wrote that column, and he said he was going to vote in support of retaining the HST. Oh, and you guys can't see one of our techies over here, thumbs up. Well, I say two thumbs down. What? And the government needs a big spanking.
Oh, but Lynn's doing two thumbs down.
You guys are already outvoted here. Not only that, Ron Gray, but I think the discussion should turn now toward not, you know, combining the GST and the PST, but eliminating the PST. Now I get a thumb up from the techie guy who wants to tax us more.
Alberta does not have
a
sales
tax. And we'll just assume Len's giving us two. No PST. The comment from the peanut gallery is that's not the referendum. Well, darn it, let's make it the referendum. Ron Gray.
That's for another time. But we will. We must do that. In fact, there's also the federal question. Why don't we do away with the income tax and replace it with a consumption tax at the consumer level? And if we need to restrict the amount of government activity because the tax would go too high and be too obvious, well, let's restrict the amount that government does that has nothing to do with its constitutional mandate.
Put a debt on the ceiling?
Put a ceiling on the debt. Yes, okay.
But that's not what we do down south. We just vote the ceiling away and increase the debt. Since when do ceilings matter?
I don't know. I remember when I was astonished that the American national debt ceiling was at $3 trillion and they wanted to raise it. Well, now they're planning to raise it over 14.
Yeah.
They might as well just do away with it.
Another zero or two, Ron Gray. What's your issue?
Well, we have a history with that. You know, in the Weimar Republic in Germany in 1923, they did away with the debt ceiling. And it wound up costing trillions of dollars.
Well, wait, Obama will say he'll rely on the precedent. Don't do it.
Okay.
Ron Gray, big show tonight. We have polygamy on the table. We've got free speech. And we have the resistance revolution all tonight on Roadkill Radio, people. Later on in the show, we're going to have a very respected lawyer, Gerald Chippier. We both know Jerry, as we call
Jerry's
him.
Jerry's a good guy. Yeah.
But he was involved with the polygamy case. Now, most people, you know, hear bits and sods that this is going on. But this is an important case. It's before our courts right now. There is a constitutional question being asked whether or not polygamy is a constitutional right, or should it remain in the Criminal Act where it currently is defined. A lot of interest in this case. I attended the first day of this hearing, and once I got through laughing at the fact that I think 90% of the country's lawyers were involved in this hearing in one way or another. BC, we had five lawyers there. There were rows, Ron Gray, rows upon rows, and it was one of our larger courtrooms, people. And not only that, the witness boxes were also taken up, and the jury box, with lawyers. It was a circus. I just laughed. And then, of course, you had every kind of family composition represented there. I have to admit, people, I learned about things that I never thought I would learn about. I didn't even know that there were things like this to learn about in some of these cases. It was educational. But tonight, Jerry Chippier is going to give us a little bit more of that education, talking about the historical perspective on why this law was brought in, what is in the interest of this nation. Lots of good arguments. We've had Doug Christie on the show before. He was arguing in favor of abolishing the polygamy law, saying these guys had a religious right because, of course, religious freedoms are involved with this matter. What are the implications to us as taxpayers? Lots of questions that need to be answered.
Yeah, I was reading today the Attorney General's submission to the court on that. By the way, a lot of people are wondering, whatever happened to that? It was in the news a while ago, and now it's disappeared. So we'll bring it back. But the Attorney General's arguments were really very good, with one glaring exception, and that is he inserted a line in there that said, of course, these arguments don't apply to the question of same-sex marriage. Really? Why not? You know, it was arguments about harm to individuals, harm to children, harm to society, and all of those are relevant in the question of same-sex marriage. You know that the ethics professor at McGill University the day after Bill C-38 was passed, legalizing same-sex marriage, he published a paper on the Internet saying Canadians must refuse to accept Bill C-38. It is ultra vires parliament.
Well, that's another discussion, that, and actually I think Philip Slayton touched on that, the Supreme Court of Canada acting as lawmaker instead of interpreter of the law.
Yeah,
coming up just in a little while, we have Robert Munoz. Now, this is going to be a fun segment. Robert is a filmmaker, a long history in the entertainment industry, now sits as president for Cube City Entertainment. And they have made a documentary on one of the guests that never ceases to amaze us, or you, our audience, Bill Watcott. Now, Bill has become a bit of a legend, a free speech legend. And as a matter of fact, I like what we said in the announcement, a provocateur of free speech. And that he is. So this is going to be fun, people.
He's one of us.
We're going to show you the trailer for this documentary that's coming out. Okay. Important discussion, an important case, free speech. can truth have a format in this nation now? Issues that are crucial to our liberty.
Is there a place for truth in this nation anymore?
God forbid.
Listen, just before we get to our first guest, I want to tell the listeners that we welcome your calls. Call area code 604-525-4167. 525-4167. Or you can email us at roadkillradio@live.ca. And I'm bringing up emails on my screen here. But when we get into our first guest, Brian Carmenker, I'm kind of anxious to have a conversation with Brian because back in 2004, Michael Carl of Mass Resistance flew me down to Boston to a big meeting in Faneuil Hall, which is the place where the Sons of Liberty plotted the Boston Tea Party. I mean, it was great to be in that place. There's pictures and statues all around of people who fought for liberty, not just for America, but for the world. It was an inspiring place to be, and I can remember.
And there you were.
And there I was with Dr. Alan Keyes, the former
goodness.
Ambassador.
And in good company.
Oh, yeah. Don Fetter, the brilliant columnist. Sandy Rios from... my mic is slipping. Okay. Anyway, it was a great time, and we ended all by chanting at Mitt Romney, who was then the governor of Massachusetts, "Do what's right! Do what's right!" And rock the hall.
Well, life is never boring in Massachusetts, and part of the reason why it's never boring is because Mass Resistance, an organization that has done amazing work,
and
you know, whenever you go visit their website, they're up to something, always good, always pushing back, always there to meet the agenda, always there as the voice of common sense and reason. And that voice these days belongs to Brian Carmenker. Hi, Brian. How are you?
Hi, Kerry. Good to be here.
Brian, welcome to Roadkill Radio. It's Ron Gray here.
Thank you very much. It's great, great to be along.
Good. Listen, you've had a victory. You've had a big victory.
Yeah, Kevin Jennings is gone.
the Kevin Jennings. Yeah, I was. That was. That was pretty thrilling. I don't know how much your audience knows about Kevin Jennings.
Well,
he was Barack Obama's safe schools czar, and was given $400 million a year of our money to push the homosexual agenda in the nation's schools. And he was, to say he was the leading homosexual activist in the country is an understatement. He did things that are just so bizarre and obscene over his career, much of which we uncovered. In fact, we were so aggravating to him that in the late 90s, he once called me at home and yelled at me.
Oh, did he?
Yeah.
Well, and I remember that he was one of the organizers of the notorious Fistigate conference.
He was not only an organizer, he was there running it. And that's just the beginning. I mean, the stuff that he did is you can't mention on the radio. It was so disgusting and obscene regarding kids, and for him to be part of the the federal government, even Barack Obama couldn't take it for very long. The kind of pressure that was being put on him.
Well, Brian, and I want to talk a little bit about that because. You know, I'm starting to see sort of an awakening, both in the United States and here in Canada now, down in Australia, that, you know, this activism, there's enough people now becoming aware and informed about what's really going on that the tables are sort of being turned now. And I look at the good work you've done with Mass Resistance, and I want you to talk a little bit about that, because you've got a great history here in exposing what's been going on. You don't get much rest because there seems to be something always happening in Massachusetts as far as, you know, this gay agenda being pushed through ad nauseum. I mean, now we add to it the transgendered issues. But your organization, tell us a little bit about how you got started and what a day in the life of Mass Resistance is like.
You know, I mean, it is funny. If if the gays were to stop doing things right now, we'd probably be able to publish something every day for the rest of the year with just our backlog. Wow. That we haven't come out with yet. It got started in the early 1990s when I was at a neighbor's house, a sort of a gathering in the neighborhood, and some woman came up with a copy of the sixth grade, the local sixth grade sex ed. It was called Living and Learning at the time, teacher's guide. And this teacher's guide had this description of bizarre homosexual sex acts that I had never seen or heard of in my life. And this was for the sixth grade, and how to, help kids meet other gays and all of this, these were homosexual, and all of this just weird, weird stuff. And I didn't believe it. And we went to a school committee member, and he said, "Oh, yeah, well, this is what parents want now." And we went to the
Brian, what, wait a minute. Didn't you know that's what you wanted as a parent?
My daughter was in the sixth grade yet, so I guess I hadn't talked to a lot of the other sixth grade parents. and so we went to the school committee meeting, and we still have the video of it because it was on cable TV, and we brought a bunch of parents, and I started, we waited our turn, and then asked to be to be heard, and we started reading from it, and their reaction was, your 3 minutes are up. If you don't leave, we'll call the police and have you thrown out of here. We don't have to explain what we do.
Oh,
and
wow.
And it just shocked me, because I would have thought that they would have said, "Oh, I can't believe we're doing it," or something like that.
You thought you were there to help them, didn't you?
The next day I was on the front page of the Boston newspapers, and a week later I was in big headlines in the local paper, where they were saying school officials fear religious right targeting schools. And they were talking about me. And one of the school committee members went to the press and on the radio and in the newspaper saying that people should stay away from me because I'm a Christian fundamentalist. Now, I'm actually Jewish. So,
Well, see, you kept learning more and more about what you wanted as a parent, what your religious beliefs were.
Yeah.
So nice of them to assist you with this.
And I was seeing my name in the homosexual newspapers in Boston about this, and all I was doing was just asking questions about this. And then what we did was we did something that really upset them. We got a civic group together. This was in 1993, and we ran candidates for school committee. And you would have thought that the SS had just marched into town. Planned Parenthood started a PAC just to oppose our candidates in this town that we live in, Newton, which is Barney Frank's hometown, by the way. And the newspapers were coming up with these great editorials, such as stealth candidates, wondering if we were these stealth candidates from some other place that had come in to take over the schools or something. I think that if they had said to me at the beginning, maybe we're going a little too far, we'll fix this. And just, even if they hadn't fixed it, if they'd have just, patted me on the head and say, "Thanks for telling me this," I probably would have just, said, "Oh, thank you very much," and just gone my way. But they not only, they were aggressive and nasty and attacked me, and I just decided I wasn't going to back down. And it turned out that a lot of parents felt the same way. And we started to gather parents, not only from around that town, but around the state. And there were some other, there's a longer story about how we got organized. We ended up in 1994 submitting a bill before the legislature on parental notification. to force the schools to notify the parents on this.
What a concept, eh?
Oh, let me tell you, you would have thought that we had come in and wanted to burn down the state or something, the way they reacted. But by that time, there were so many parents who were outraged about this that even though the legislature wanted no part of this, we put enough pressure on them that the House and the Senate passed it, and Governor Bill Weld, who didn't really support it at all, ended up signing it, and it's still law. And we have an update to that law now, but that's sort of how things got started, and it just sort of went from there. And we changed our name to Article 8 Alliance around the time of the gay marriage thing, having to do with Article 8 of the Massachusetts Constitution, which has to do with throwing out judges and public officials who are arrogant and abusive. And then we found that name was a little complicated, so we changed it to Mass Resistance around 2004, 2005, and that name is sort of stuck.
And very apropos, if you ask me.
Brian, I should tell the audience here in British Columbia and across Canada that the kinds of concerns that Mass Resistance has been so effective in working against are equally concerns here. I mean, you know, Kevin Jennings is not part of our government, but this is the guy that started the Gay Straight Alliance clubs.
No,
they're in our schools.
Well, more importantly, Ron, the literature from the gay activists that are busy putting this into our schools quote and rely on their information.
Oh, yeah.
Kevin Jennings comes up often.
He also started the Gay Lesbian Straight Educators Network, GLESN.
Right.
And that's also here in our schools.
And that began here in Massachusetts.
Yeah.
Kevin Jennings was a teacher at Concord Academy, not too far from, our office, actually. And he started the Gay Straight Alliances there. Yeah. And it just blossomed into this huge, giant organization getting, millions of dollars from American corporations to push this. But, yeah, and we have done a lot to expose what they're doing. I mean, we've been to their regional meetings, the Fiscade conference, which you mentioned.
Yeah.
And it is ghastly, the kinds of things that these people do with kids. I mean, it's just indescribable. The whole Fiscade thing was...
Yeah, maybe instead of just the name, we ought to give a brief description of that notorious conference to our audience, because they may not have heard of Fiscade.
Well, what they did was they had these workshops for kids as young as 12 on how to perform homosexual sex acts and descriptions on how to do it sort of showing them how. And Fiscade involves putting your hand up someone's rectum. I mean, I hate to put it that way, but that's what they were showing kids.
Okay, but Brian, let's hold off so I can. I want our audience to understand how this works, how this is introduced into the schools, because most parents are clueless. This comes in under the guise of health curriculums quite often.
Yeah.
And parents think, oh, well, it must be vetted, it must be appropriate. Well, if you think that, people, go to your school. That's your first warning sign, okay?
Yeah.
They invite in organizations or facilitators to present the health information to kids, and you think it's just this well-vetted, researched, proper, parental respecting information, educational information, but that's not what happened here. They call in a workshop for under the guise of health. They bring in these facilitators and they start talking about anal sex, all different kinds of homosexual acts and acts that have been known to be medically dangerous to human beings, especially children. And were parents given any notification that the content of these workshops were going to be like this, Brian?
Oh, no.
No.
Absolutely not. And what happened was one of our people went in there and tape recorded it, and when we published the tape, we not only published the tapes, but we went to the state legislature and at a press conference handed them out to every state legislator, and we had them on the radio and television. It was a huge thing here, and what they did was they got a judge to put an injunction against us doing it.
Okay, wait a minute. You have a parent who's smart enough to record, because what's going on in the classroom should be recordable, one would think.
Well, this was not in the classroom, but it was in a workshop that kids were brought to from schools.
Oh, my goodness.
But it was not in a classroom itself. But nevertheless, it was a school-sponsored activity. The people that did it were state employees. They ended up getting fired. It was a state-sponsored event where the state commissioner of education had his picture in the program of the workshop guide. So the state was a huge part of it. They paid for it, and yeah, you would think so. And the outrage that happened, this original thing where they had an original injunction against us distributing it was so offensive and ridiculous that Alan Dershowitz got on the radio defending me. and that doesn't happen very often. But what ended up happening was they did this long lawsuit against us, and they ended up not prevailing, but it was very expensive and very difficult. But that's what they try to do. They try to attack people. They try to sue them. They try to do anything to silence them. And they certainly attempted to do that to us. But
now,
we've continued to expose the stuff that GLSEN and these other groups do with kids.
Now, all of this information, and I just want to draw our audience, because your website, massresistance.org, is full of information, including the whole information as they relate to Fiskgate, the tapes. I think the transcripts are there, are they not?
Oh, yeah, we have the tapes. You can listen to them and read the transcripts. And it's you can't believe that human beings would do this with kids. And not only did they do it, but they said that they would do it again if they could.
Hmm.
They are unrepentant.
They
believe in doing this stuff.
It really is unbelievable when you. But you know, the other thing that is unbelievable is that there's, apart from the state of Massachusetts and now beginning in British Columbia, there's so little response from parents. I think mostly they don't believe that this really is going on, because it's quite unbelievable.
Well, you're right. You almost want to call it the concentration camp syndrome, where it's so horrible that nobody wants to believe it. And not only do they not believe it, but they don't want to believe it. They don't want to hear about it because it's too horrible to contemplate. And we run into a lot of that. And the other thing is that people are very fearful. You know, the homosexual movement is extremely vicious, as I'm sure you know.
Yeah.
And people are afraid to talk about it because they're afraid of them. So
they're vicious until you stand up to them. Then they're rather wimpy, Brian.
Yeah,
you
that's
know,
true.
They don't tangle with me anymore, and it's ruined a lot of my fun, because it used to be great film footage, right? You know, their attempts to silence free speech and these kinds of things. Now, it sounds like you have the similar problem that we have up here, and that our courts seem to be blinded by the indoctrination. We have one set of rules for the rest of the people, and then another special rules for the homosexual community. But
it's ridiculous and absurd. They get their way with everything. They get their way through the state government. GLSEN still receives state funding. After all of this, GLSEN and their allies received $100,000 in the new state budget that was just passed. I mean, in this difficult recession, in the past we've been able to stop some of their funding, but this year they managed to get it. I mean, it's bizarre. We have had a lot of successes, by the way, in the legislature. The Massachusetts is one of the few states where they've tried to pass a transgender bill and they failed. Not only have they failed, but they failed twice, and this is the third time. And, you know, I think we'll take certainly a lot of the credit. We have been on top of those guys, on top of that issue, a lot. And the horrors of the transgender movement in this state and what they've done that a lot of people don't know are pretty bizarre.
Yeah, let's talk about what's going on in California, because one of the videos that you feature, and actually we will link to our RKR News, is about what's going in. And actually, did it come out in the announcement? Yes, it did. It is about what goes on in an elementary class where, you know, it's an education in confusion. We had Dr. Miriam Grossman on a few weeks ago talking about how detrimental this is to the proper development, the healthy development of children. How is this getting into the schools? And now there's a bill that's just been passed in California that parents can't opt out of this indoctrination. I mean, talk about concentration camp mentality. I think we've got concentration camps going on.
Yeah, it's, you know, people have a very difficult time, you know, wrapping their heads around just how bizarre some of these people in the schools are that allow this to happen and actually put it on with young kids. I mean, it's bad enough they do in the high schools. I mean, but some of the things that they do, it's just ghastly. It's horrific. You know, why would you do this with the minds of young children? And you just have a bunch of people in the public school system who are, I don't know, evil. I don't know any other way to put it, that they would do this with young kids' minds and knowing that the parents don't want it. I don't know any other way to put it. You know, when you talk to these people, it's like talking to a person from outer space.
But isn't there also the aspect, Brian, because we try to understand, because everything that's going on in the States, you can ditto up here in Canada, okay? So all of our loyal fans out there, find out what's going on in your classroom. And the other thing, loyal fans, if there's one thing that I know Brian will agree with me on and what Ron will agree with me on is it's time that as parents we took the responsibility and the role of parenting seriously to the point of being righteously pissed off.
Amen.
If somebody oversteps their boundaries and moves in on our kids to play with their minds. And there's a political aspect attached to this, Brian, at least what we found up here in British Columbia. And I think that, you know, somebody asked me years ago, Carrie, if you could do one thing to change Canada for the better, what would you do? I said, give me the public education system for 18 years. That's all I need. You know, molding those young minds and the ability to do so, indoctrinating them with my way of thinking would be, you know, we would solve all of Canada's problems. I assure you of that. But, you know, isn't there a political movement here? If we can divert children's minds to be focused on sex and drugs and violent video games, you know, and cause enough distress and disturbance within the family home, doesn't that keep all of us common sense civil people otherwise occupied and not enough time or energy to be watching what's really going on with government?
It's an interesting thought. I haven't really contemplated that idea too much, but it's very interesting. I mean, there's certainly something going on because the obsession that these people have with doing this with kids is quite profound. I mean, I can remember in, I guess it was 94 when they were going to put condoms in the schools, and we were, you know, against that, and the vigor and the unbelievable force that they wanted to do that with was mind-boggling. I mean, they were going to put condoms in the schools, and nothing was going to stop them. I mean, the fight in our town was so big that I ended up being on the national news. The NBC Nightly News came to Newton and had me on over that fight. And it was, there's also, of course, the interesting aspect, and I'll never forget this, because they had this huge meeting, and I stood up, and their thing was that children are dying of AIDS, and there's this horrible epidemic of kids dying of AIDS, and you need to have these condoms to stop it, or else you are helping kill kids. So I got up and I said, okay, can somebody please name one kid that's ever died of AIDS in the entire state of Massachusetts because they didn't have a condom? Just name one. Mm-hmm. And, of course, nobody could name any because the whole thing was made up. Yeah. You know, but that didn't defer, that didn't deter them at all.
But isn't that always the way when they slide these things in, Brian? I mean, I talk often about the sex abuse prevention programs. You know, if we save one child, well, to heck if we destroy all the relationships between little five-year-olds and their fathers and grandfathers, right?
Yeah.
And then we have the issues that we're currently dealing with, you know, bullying, you know, all these heart-pulling emotional twists that cloud people's judgment when they look at a program and go, okay, well, this might be our objective, but what is the reality? What are we achieving if we go down this road?
Well, and you're getting onto something. Their objective really isn't to stop bullying.
Absolutely.
Because
not.
If they did, they wouldn't be doing that.
No.
Because
you know,
they are bullies.
You know, behavioral scientists have shown, I mean, this has even been in the Boston Globe, that the programs that the state of Massachusetts has come up with have no effect whatsoever. They're politically oriented. You know, they're to push a political agenda. And if they really wanted to stop this, they would do things completely differently. But, yeah there is, you know, something is going on. They are destroying kids' minds and kids' relationships. They don't seem to care how it affects kids. They have an agenda or an obsession or a worldview, whatever you want to call it, and there's just no stopping them. Except through confrontation.
But Brian,
that works.
Brian, this worldview has been attacking through the schools since Horace Mann and John Dewey and Margaret Sanger. But what interests me is, because we look at the success of mass resistance, how do you go about organizing and mobilizing parents and other ordinary citizens to become involved in this? It seems like most people, you know, both parents in a family are working because that they have to do that in order to pay the tax man.
So they have to pay the taxes so they can give $100,000 to the group that's destroying
their
family.
Destroying their children. I mean,
what we found, first of all, we've been doing this long enough, like 16 years, that we have connected with lots and lots of parents. Thousands of parents around the state have at one point contacted us, and we stay in touch with them. And if you know, people can't do a lot, but everybody can do something.
Mm-hmm.
And you know, people just even doing a little bit can have an enormous effect. I remember once at my kids' high school, we stopped the Day of Silence, which I don't know if you've heard of that. That's
We have it here.
The Day of Silence was this huge thing. I mean, you know, in Newton, again, is a very liberal town, and we did it by getting maybe 8 parents to confront the principal and not say we would prefer that you didn't do this. Maybe it was a dozen parents, but to say, you will not push this perversion on our kids on this day. You simply will not do it. And they got very angry, and they did it one after the other, and the principal backed down.
Mm-hmm.
And they actually stopped it for that year. Now, it turns out that most of these parents, you know, their kids were seniors, and so they went back the next day or the next year. But it's amazing what a few people can do. And if you get a lot of people, if you get like 50 people or 100 people just doing something, it has an enormous effect. These people are bullies, and the people standing up to them, they don't like it, and they're not used to it. The times that we stopped bills in the legislature, I mean, the transgender bill last year had over 100 co-sponsors. That means over half of the legislature, there's 200 members, were co-sponsors. So on paper, it passes. When we were done, it didn't even get out of committee.
Wow.
Because we just showered them with the kinds of perversion that we had seen going on. I mean, they at the same time they were pushing this, they were having these transgender parades where women who had had their breasts surgically removed to become men, quote unquote, were parading shirtless down the street. And we were showing them, this is where this movement is going, and this is what's going on, you know, and this is the kind of thing that's going to be in the schools, and you're not going to do this. We're simply not going to take it. And now, unfortunately, in Massachusetts is a small enough state where people from all over the state can converge on the state house fairly easily, because the farthest away place is maybe a two-hour drive. California, on the other hand, it's a little harder to do that, because, you know, you could drive for a week, and, well, not quite a week, but, it, you know, it's a much larger state, and the pro-family groups have simply not done that. Well, and the legislature there is just completely out of control, and they just hope that by the time it gets out that either the governor won't sign it or they can have some kind of referendum to stop it. But,
well, and Brian, you and I had this discussion because I told you, you know, forget California. We can top that here in British Columbia. Not only are we bigger than California, but our legislature is on an island.
Yeah, I know.
Brian, yeah. I want to talk to you about funding, because we are seeing the change, if you will, in how people can help on these different things. You know, teachers' unions have unions. The government has our taxes. This revolution that needs to happen and is happening with organizations like what you're doing with Mass Resistance up here with the Parents' Voice, back east, there's all kinds of different groups that are standing up for these. But funding is key and essential. Do you get proper funding from the families that you are standing up for? Because they, as far as I'm concerned, they should be giving you $20 a month to do the war for them so that they can keep working, so that they can have a life. Because I don't imagine you get much of a life outside of standing up against this onslaught that continuously comes day after day.
Yeah, it's very difficult. We're constantly running on fumes. a lot of people will donate what they can, but the trouble is unlike the left and unlike the moderate conservative wing, we don't have big donors that write $25,000, $50,000 checks, and or the left that has big donors writing $100,000 or $1 million checks. And that's, you know, I mean, what happened in New York, I mean, perversely, with their gay marriage thing was Republicans, conservatives, were actually funding the gay marriage thing. But it's a terrible thing. I mean, the big money on the conservative side of things in this country, and I think in many parts of the world, is afraid, you know, and it's up to the average person to donate and to keep movements like ours going. And it's not just us, it's the movements like us around the country.
But you know what, Brian, I think each one of those individual families does have a responsibility, because you are standing in the gap for them. You are the parents' union. You are the voice of the civil-minded, common-sense parent who doesn't have time to inundate their brain with all of the knowledge that you have. But for $20 a month, if they were to give you ongoing support, that would make the difference for your organization to do even bigger and better things than you're already doing.
Oh, absolutely. And again, one of the things that we're able to do, as I was saying, is parents often feel alone. Mm-hmm. And we not only show them that they're not alone, but we give them the materials that they can use to fight back. We've gone into schools and we've, talked to the principals and, you know, read them the Riot Act. And not only that, but our material is used around the country. Our material was used in the Proposition 8 election, in the gay marriage election in
California,
in Maine. It was
in Maine.
It was mailed to like 200,000 people.
Wow.
Some of the GLSEN stuff that we found was used in Maryland and it was actually on television because the Republican Party mailed it across the state, and it was this really horrible stuff. But they said this is what's going to happen, and gay marriage was stopped in Maryland. Mm. Over, well, a lot of people say it was largely due to the stuff that we gave them.
Oh, without a doubt, Brian. Brian, listen, we've fast run out of time here, which it just goes by so fast when there's so much to talk about on this subject matter. I want your people, I'm going to speak directly to the people down in Massachusetts that every day have access to the good works you're doing, whether they realize it or not. There is a difference being made because of what Mass Resistance is doing. And I would like them to look into very closely your website, massresistance.org. Look at the amount of work. Look at the exposure that's been going on with the behind the scenes, the stuff that's being done in the dark and secrets of your children's classroom. Give Brian Carmichael a call and send him some money, okay? I'm going to tell him to do that.
And to the people in British Columbia and across Canada, take note of the fact that for more than a decade and a half, these people at Mass Resistance have been standing. You know, the other side will bring, you have it with that transgender bill, you know, this is third time up now.
Right.
You know, for them, when they propose something atrocious like that, the philosophy is yes means yes and no means wrong answer, try again. And they will keep trying and they will keep trying. And unless there's an organization like Mass Resistance or like Parents' Voice in Burnaby that will continue to stand and continue to oppose it and watch for it coming back under another name and do the analysis. Mm-hmm. And for that, they have to contribute some money to the people who do that kind of work and do the analysis and get the news out. But
war is not cheap, people.
We've got to stand. We've got to stand and keep standing.
And united with resources because, as you've said, Brian, and what we know from up here in British Columbia is that the left is plugged in really good to our tax dollars. The fact that we pay for our own demise has got to end. But that would bring us to a whole nother subject matter called tax revolt. So, Brian, thank you so much for joining us tonight.
Well, thank you. It's a pleasure to be on, and you guys are, it's just a breath of fresh air.
Brian, say hello to Michael Carl for me, will you?
I will. I talk to him from time to time. Yeah. He's quite a guy.
I enjoyed the time that I came down there, and you know, that was when Mitt Romney was the governor, and they were still struggling over the gay marriage ruling from the SJC then.
And it didn't, you know, one of our activists has just written a book on Mitt Romney's failings in the gay agenda and that whole marriage thing that's very interesting. It's going to be coming out in a few days.
Well, make sure
that, you know, Romney could have stopped it, and he didn't.
Yeah.
And there's a couple of shows on that someday.
Well, let us know when the book comes out, okay?
I sure will.
All right, Brian.
Thank you very much. It was wonderful talking to you.
Great to talk to you, Brian.
We will do this again. Yeah.
Good night.
Yep, good night.
Now, listen, before we go on to our next guest, I want to remind the audience that you can participate in this. You can call in. Our on-air telephone number is 604-525-4167, or better yet, email us at roadkillradio@live.ca, and we'll read the emails that we get out here.
Well, we've got some emails coming in already. We've got one that says, from Good Boy, Kate H5 defines family as people who love each other. This definition provides a beautifully expanded understanding of family that also extends to family of the same sex and their children. Early childhood education promotes are the vanguard in promoting inclusive attitudes, values, understanding, appreciation of various family constructs. And you know why I'm going to read that, Ron? Because this is the argument that comes back. And one of the things that has, and I'm going to just take a moment before we move on to our next guest, to expose the lie that's associated with this touchy-feely nonsense that we've embraced. Family, having a mother and a father in a
The solid marriage environment is the best protection for children. Children need both a male and a female, you know, role model.
That's what marriage is about, not about adults feeling good.
Yeah. And let's look at the interest of children, you know, and I will say this, children are born with two holes in their heart, one for mom and one for dad. And as a single mother of four children, because their father passed away, you know, there was a weak link in our family, one that couldn't be filled easily and one that could never be filled completely, because dad plays a special role, and rightly so. We would never want to be able to band-aid that relationship. You know, so yeah, life's not fair and there's some downfalls to it. But, you know, this kind of nonsense, I am so tired of this bullshit. And that's all it is about feeling good, embracing, oh, we got to just love one another.
Yes.
Nonsense. Sorry, I needed that rant today.